runasradio.com. You're listening to Run As Radio, the weekly internet audio talk show for IT professionals with Richard Campbell and Greg Hughes. This is Carl Franklin introducing show number 23 with guest Tom Clark, recorded Thursday, September 6th, 2007. Run As Radio is produced each week by Pwop Productions, offering professional media and podcasting services online at pwop.com.
Hi, this is Richard Campbell, and you're listening to Run As Radio. I'm the host and my co-host, also on the West Coast, Greg Hughes.
On the West Coast, that's me. Hey, how you doing, Richard? And hello, everybody.
We were just gloating about how nice our cities are, too, Vancouver and Portland.
Yeah, I think we're a couple of lucky guys.
I'm not complaining.
Yeah, I've been to Vancouver once.
I've been down to Portland a number of times. I used to do some work for ADT down there ages ago.
Ah.
But the reason for that conversation was because we were going to Barcelona.
Yeah, coming up here pretty darn soon, actually.
Tech Ed Europe, the IT Forum Week, is the week of November 12th, and Greg and I are going to be there, and we're doing Speaker Idle, and we're also going to do the 64-bit question, which is the game show that Carl Franklin over at .NET Rocks cooked up, where we ask trivia questions about IT, and you win prizes.
Sounds like a lot of fun.
Oh, it's going to be a scream. And speaking of Barcelona, there's a contest running over on the .NET Rocks site at .NETRocks.com where you can win yourself a 24-inch monitor and or a Tom Bin brain bag, which is the best laptop bag known to man. All you got to do is fill in some data about yourself and answer a question about a .NET Rocks show, and you can win.
Am I eligible to win?
Greg, you're not.
Oh, man.
Folks that work with Pwop can't win a thing, but I'll see what I can do for you anyway.
Sounds pretty cool. Sounds like, that's cool stuff.
And you've seen the lineup of new shows we've got coming up here. This show is about iSCSI. I'm also getting into some Exchange spam control and more business intelligence. Got a strong reaction about Don Farmer's show.
Yeah.
So I think we got to dig into that some more. And if you've got some ideas for shows that you'd like to see, contact us at info@runasradio.com. All right, Greg, let me introduce you to Tom Clark. Tom Clark is a resident sand evangelist for Brocade and represents Brocade in industry associations, conducts seminars and tutorials at conferences and trade shows, promotes Brocade storage network solutions, and acts as a customer liaison. A noted author and industry advocate of storage network technology, he is a board member of the Storage Network Industry Association and works with SNIA End User Council and SNIA Green Storage Task Force. Clark has published hundreds of articles and white papers on storage networking and is the author of Designing Storage Area Networks, Second Edition, and IP SANs, A Guide to iSCSI, IFCP, FCIP Protocols for Storage Area Networks, and Storage Virtualization Technologies for Simplifying Data Storage and Management. Welcome, Tom.
Good morning.
You've definitely got an area of focus.
Well, I've been working in the storage networking industry now for over 10 years. So, yes, this was really a fascinating technology when it first emerged.
And it definitely evolved. I mean, the first time I really started thinking in terms of storage technology was when Fibre Channel came along. The only complaint I ever had with Fibre Channel was that it was catastrophically expensive.
Yeah, that in the early days especially, but... You know, it was the high-end enterprises, finance industry, insurance, large manufacturers that had the desperate need to solve their storage problems that were really sort of the, funded the research and development of the technology. And when you look at storage area networks and the types of additional facilities that have to be provided, part of the cost involved in fiber channels, the fact that the you do have to build in all these advanced services into the product. The fiber channel switches are far more sophisticated than standard gigabit Ethernet switches, as an example. Fiber channel host bus adapters also do a lot of have a lot of facilities that are not found in standard network interface cards. And then the storage systems themselves, of course, are designed to be 5 nines availability, you know, very high-end, robust system. So that cost, although it has come down over the years, is still linked to the types of services that the high end of the enterprises really require.
We were talking about really robust equipment, but I think the only reason that Fibre Channel justified itself was its speed. And then, of course, all that other stuff came along with it. So is it just gigabit Ethernet that's rendered Fibre Channel obsolete?
Well, it's not obsolete yet.
Yet.
In fact, if you look at, the medium and large enterprises worldwide, and I've done quite a bit of traveling in my career, it's amazing when you go to really any place that has developed business, they're running their businesses on the basis of Fibre Channel SAN. Now, in the early days, it really wasn't feasible to have an IP solution for storage because all you had was fast Ethernet to work with. And Fibre Channel was really the first gigabit transport that came on the scene. And only thereafter was gigabit Ethernet developed. So the early development on the storage side was on the basis of Fibre Channel, and it was initially 1 gigabit, then 2 gigabit, today 4 gigabit and 8 gigabit coming up. So you have very high performance. But there are a lot of other facilities that are involved here as well. Alternate pathing, failover capability, redundancy within the fabric, a lot of fabric services in terms of device discovery that are not found in traditional networks. Those are all continued to be evolved on the basis of Fibre Channel.
Right. And of course, they call it a fabric because it's Fibre Channel.
Well, they call it a fabric because, yes, it's a channel architecture. It's a link layer or layer two transport that does not have the protocol overhead of, say, TCP.
Yeah, which I was just thinking, TCP is a lousy protocol for the kind of broad, fast data transfers you're talking about in a SAN.
Well, the difference is whether you design for pretty much the circumference of the data center, which is where the channel component applies, as right. opposed to wide area networking or just your traditional LAN networking, where you assume latency, you assume some packet loss and recovery. In storage environments, that's really anathema. You need to have the minimal protocol overhead, very high speed transport, and yet have robustness that you don't have data loss or errors.
Yeah, I never thought of Fibre Channel as wide area anything. It's all within the data center.
Yeah, exactly. And that's really the differentiator and the reason that Fibre Channel endures as the protocol of choice for data center environments is that it has solved all these problems and can provide the bandwidth and the low protocol overhead to expedite the data delivery. Now, when you get to 10 gigabit Ethernet and 10 gigabit transports in general, then you begin changing that picture somewhat because you've resolved the raw bandwidth issue associated with IP.
Yeah, you're now very, very fast at 10 gigabit.
There's a lot of different technologies available. I mean, back to iSCSI, but all the new things that are out these days, a lot of buzzwords. It's really, I think, pretty confusing for the average IT guy. Is it worthwhile, do you think, to spend a couple of minutes sort of doing a rundown of what the storage and transport landscape looks like today?
Sure.
And maybe you could talk about, where does it really apply? Sort of a nuts and bolts view for the masses, if you will.
Yeah, and the analogy that's commonly used is that if you think of traditional data communications networks as highways with cars, packets moving down highways, storage is more like freight trains. We're talking massive amounts of data with a very high speed requirement to move data from block data from a storage device into a server, either reading of data or writing of data. And so it's a different paradigm compared to standard data communications infrastructure.
And I got to also think it's all local networking. It's probably relatively fewer endpoints. There's just not as many servers as there are, say, workstations, and then much larger chunks of data. So I think the freight train analogy is pretty reasonable.
And then when you get to the high end, the very large enterprises, they may have, tens of thousands of or hundreds of thousands of workstations. but they will have at least tens of thousands of storage ports, storage devices, and servers connected within their data centers.
Right.
So they're still very large infrastructures at the high end. For the medium small business category, typically talking about several, maybe two or three storage arrays, a fabric interface of say switches or directors, and then a half dozen, two dozen servers. So on a much smaller scale, and really it's that mid-tier where they have both the budget constraint and they do not really have as high a performance requirement as the large data centers, is an area where iSCSI can play. And that's where you see the adoption is sort of the mid to low end of the market.
And so this is gigabit Ethernet ports on the servers, gigabit Ethernet switches, and then these SAN devices that also have gigabit Ethernet into the drive array.
Yes. And you also see some hybrid technologies. Network Appliance, as an example, has a filer that provides both the file access through standard NFS or CIFS protocols, as well as iSCSI block access. And the difference being in terms of which you would pick, some applications are fine with simple file access. Other applications really want to have that immediate block access, particularly applications such as databases.
Sure.
And if you think of NAS, of network attached storage or file server type access, even on the back end of that, the data ultimately resides on block storage.
Right. I mean, in the end, it's always block storage. It's just a question of who manages the blocks, the server that requested them or the device itself.
Yeah, exactly.
I tend to work away from NAS just because you get into issues around what security models it supports and how well does it fit into your network fabric and so forth, where SANs I look at is attached to one or more specific servers who are ultimately responsible for the control of access to that data.
Yeah, and my view is really driven by the application. Some applications, like I say, are served very well by file serving or NAS type connectivity. You actually do achieve the highest performance and the most direct path when you're going directly for blocks, whether it's on Fibre Channel or iSCSI.
Right. So, I mean, NAS is just not an option for a storage for a SQL server, really. You'd go to a SAN or internal drives.
Yeah, typically, yeah.
On the flip side of that, it's probably also safe to say that NAS is a great option for, relatively inexpensive storage of a file server type where you simply need to have, shared access to a simple file system.
And I wonder if this is where we're going with this, is that at the very high end, we have the fiber channels and the fabrics and these large SAN solutions. And then you go down from there and you see iSCSI in the midstream areas, and more the NAS type solutions lower end, smaller shops.
Yeah. And that's, the alternative for that tier of user is to continue using direct attached storage. And direct attached storage has so many inherent issues in terms of management. It's not so bad when it's on a small scale, but as you require more storage and you're expanding and hopefully your business is growing, at some point, it makes sense to begin going to a networked solution. And iSCSI is one type of solution that the customer could look at.
So when we talk about direct attached storage, we're talking about the IDE and SCSI hard drives that are mounted in our servers.
Yeah.
And every one of them has to be managed separately and fails separately and has to be repaired separately. Go ahead.
Yeah, and the data on those drives is captive to that server.
Right.
So if the server fails, you've lost access to that data. And that's one issue that you can circumvent by having a networked storage solution.
Right. So, I guess that's a big thing about a network storage solution. This is not just attaching one machine to an array of drives, but several machines.
Yeah. It's not quite a peer-to-peer type network because you still have this client-server relationship between the servers being the initiators and the storage being the passive targets, but by virtue of being on a network, it's much easier to streamline operations such as, failover. If you have a server go out of service, another server can assume the task of the failed unit. You can also streamline operations such as tape backup, which previously had to be managed on an individual server-by-server basis.
Right,
right.
Now that you've centralized your storage, you can streamline that operation as well.
So to try to draw this picture, you know, maybe a little visually, if I have, you know, my servers in my data center, I have a whole library or a cabinet, if you will, of drives, then somewhere, at least logically in the middle, I assume there's some kind of a management system that's actually handling the whole process of making sure that my servers in my data center individually are connecting to the proper volumes on the storage device on the back end.
Yeah, and that type of administration has been a constant and pressing issue in the development of SAN technology.
Right.
Luckily for iSCSI, a lot of that hard work was done already in the fiber channel development. So the management component, you still have to create your lines, your logical units for storage capacity.
Sure.
You still have to bind those to individual servers. You have to have, or you would prefer to have, some sort of zoning technique or line masking technique so you could prevent unauthorized servers from accessing a resource that they don't have permission for. And that type of management facility is built partly into the infrastructure, partly into the fabric, and partly provided by the supplying storage vendor. So you'll have a utility that, you know, streamlines or facilitates creation of lines and assignments to servers and failover mechanisms and so on.
Right. Now, LUN is a logical unit, correct?
Yeah, logical unit number, which is, you know, the slice out of a volume that you assign to an individual server. If I need, you know, 200 gig of capacity, then I can create a LUN, a storage, you know, a logical unit that represents that amount of capacity that is then thereafter dedicated to a particular server.
Right. I may have 5 terabytes actually sitting in my cabinet. I'll sort of carve out 2 gigs and assign that over to a LUN, which I can then logically associate with like a host bus adapter or some kind of a card, whether it's built in or whatever, in my server. So just want to make sure everybody understands and make sure I'm correct. So then that 2 gig drive or whatever it is basically appears to that server to be local storage.
Yes. The great advantage of continuing to use SCSI as the basic protocol, whether it's SCSI in a fiber channel form or SCSI in an iSCSI form, it's completely compatible with existing OSs and how the operating system expects to see storage. It all appears local, although in reality it's out on a network.
Gotcha.
And of course, since you're using TCP as the transport in an iSCSI model, the drive could be fairly far away. It probably isn't, but it doesn't really matter, does it?
Well, it matters in terms of latency. Storage transactions, it really depends on the transaction. If you engender too much latency by going over longer distances, then you begin impacting performance on the application. And applications don't like that. So there are some applications that are fairly tolerant. Asynchronous data replication, as an example, is tolerant of latency. And we have at Brocade installations that are running tens of thousands of miles over asynchronous applications.
And is that a leased line connection, or is that actually an internet connection?
It varies. Some customers have their own dedicated line. Some are actually leveraging internet and carving out VPNs.
Yeah, so I could imagine having devices controlling a VPN connection on either end. This is a great way for a WAN-type connection to offload for backup, for example.
Yeah, and that's actually one of the viable applications. There's another protocol, fiber channel over IP, that is still fiber channel-based, but it leverages IP infrastructure to move the data from, you know, one remote location to another. That's commonly used for backup and disaster recovery. iSCSI, it really depends on the application. You could have some at least campus-based offices or remote, say, metropolitan.
Yeah, out of the building rather than out of the country.
Yes, and have them still access some shared storage or shared assets like the tape using iSCSI protocol. There's also hybrid solutions such as iSCSI gateways. Brocade, as an example, has a freestanding unit as well as a blade that goes into the 48K Director product that provides iSCSI ports, gigabit Ethernet ports, so that you can have banks of probably mid-tier servers, the more economical 1U rack mount servers that typically previously would have been direct attached storage. And you can now bring those in using iSCSI protocol into your existing fiber channel SAN. The advantage being that you no longer have to manage these mid-tier servers individually. You can now leverage your investment in your fiber channel infrastructure and streamline backup operations or leverage shared storage off your existing fiber channel SAN. And those units do the protocol translation between iSCSI to fiber channel and back.
And as far as the protocol is concerned, and iSCSI is concerned, this is the connection between the servers and the box. The drives themselves can be anything?
They can be fiber channel. They can be IDE. They can be serial ATA. And there are, in fact, a lot of solutions out there. Serial ATA, serial SCSI type drives.
Right.
And they sort of scale in price according to the sophistication of the drive technology.
Yeah. What do you want to buy? I mean, with terabyte SATA drives out there these days, it's pretty tempting to use those, but then you need to connect to them some logical way. You mentioned NetApp. Should we talk about a few of the other vendors that are out there for this kind of technology?
Well, you know, there are, I would say all the major storage vendors have already are introducing some form of iSCSI connectivity.
Right.
And it may be only on their mid-tier products or low-end products, or it may be an option that's on both the high-end and the low-end products. We're moving more into a multi-protocol environment today, where we're accommodating different types of applications on different protocols which reflect different price points. And one of the claims to fame of iSCSI is that it is low cost. You could use a free device driver on a standard gigabit Ethernet interface card, run it through a very economical gigabit Ethernet switch, and then connect to an iSCSI storage target. And so that cost advantage has the trade-off of, well, it is still all 1 gigabit, and it probably doesn't have a lot of the functionality or the performance that the high-end applications would require, but it may be very suitable for a mid-tier, the low-end level application.
And just to be clear, this is isolated from your regular TCP/IP network.
And that can't be stressed quite enough, I think. A lot of people have the impression they're just going to plug storage devices and servers into their existing LAN infrastructures, and because they're switched to Ethernet, that won't cause a problem. But again, we're talking freight trains loads of data compared to the sort of sporadic messaging traffic that's common to LAN traffic. You really need to have a dedicated infrastructure.
You really ought to be dedicated. Could I get away with a VLAN? Is it not actually going to harm anything if I just create a VLAN and carve off 4 ports on my existing switch?
Well, you can. It's not a violation of any principle. There are vendors, there are storage vendors, however, that will not allow that.
And most of the time when I've seen this set up, especially with something like a NetApp, everybody's in one rack or they're side-by-side racks, and there's almost no switches involved. We're running directly from the server to the NetApp with Ethernet cable.
Mm-hmm.
And that just, to me, seems the clearest way you would do it. You'd only get involved with the switches when the distances get bigger or when the connectivity is more complicated than that.
Yeah, exactly. It depends on the scale of your deployment. But you can trim it down fairly significantly. On the other hand, the Ethernet switches are so cheap.
Yeah, spend the money. Go buy a dedicated switch just so you don't mix things up.
Yeah, even gigabit Ethernet switches are really quite affordable. It's a different picture, as I said, when you go to 10 gig, because we're really talking more sophisticated interface cards. More expensive per port switch attachment and more expense on the storage target side as well when you jump up to 10 gig.
So why would I want to go to 10 gig?
Well, again, it's a trade-off. I think there's no compelling reason to if your applications are happy at 1 gigabit. If you have 10 gig on your infrastructure and say 10 gig on the storage target, it does enable for much larger fan-in ratio and simplified cabling plan, because you can increase the fan-in ratio between the number of servers that you bring in at 1 gig, and then you have these big fat storage ports at 10 gig.
But I mean, 10 gig hard drives can't keep up. You're going to have to have quite a big array of drives to get to consume that kind of transfer rate.
Yeah, and we're not really talking about a sort of mid-tier solution here. We're beginning to move up the scale to a higher-end, more enterprise-level solution, both in terms of the cost and the performance requirements. At the same time, you already have coming to market 8 gig and 10 gig fiber channel.
Right.
And so those, the customers at the high end will really have to determine what the best solution is for them. I don't see MyScuzzy at 10 gig having a particular advantage until the price points of all the 10 gig Ethernet infrastructure come down significantly. My advice to customers is MyScuzzy is a very economical shared storage solution. Rejoice in its cheapness, leverage that cheapness, and celebrate it and use it for mid-tier, moderate performance requirement applications. Whatever the lowest cost infrastructure that you can, but don't expect it to perform as a high-end, fiber channel replacement, because it won't. We'll have, performance considerations and, bandwidth potential, depending on how you design your network, whether you make it, blocking or non-blocking. You may not have the failover type capability, sophisticated capability as is found on the very high end, but it is quite suitable as a mid-tier level solution, and especially for large data centers. I'm always surprised that some of these large data centers, although they're running their most mission-critical business applications on fiber channel, still have thousands of standalone direct-attach servers running web applications or moderate performance applications. And so using something like a nice SCSI gateway is an excellent solution there, even at 1 gig, to bring those devices into your existing SAN infrastructure.
In today's enterprise world, I guess part of this is probably also about future-proofing, I would think. I can remember when 10Base2 was like really, really fast and couldn't imagine anything faster than that. So then I think it's a good point about the data, the recovery time and recovery point objectives that some of the bigger enterprises have today is moving that data very quickly and very reliably, and being able to do the validation of that can have a real financial benefit.
Yeah, there's two developments here. One is iSCSI going to 10 gig at the same time that this new protocol, fiber channel over Ethernet, is also predicated on being 10 gigabit. The difference is that iSCSI still has the TCP stack, the entire TCP/IP stack.
Right.
Whereas fiber channel over 10 gig Ethernet, or what's called data center Ethernet, will maintain this layer 2 nature. So it'll have that low protocol overhead, be more channel-like. There are a number of issues associated with FCOE in terms of modifications to Ethernet. Ethernet has a different type of flow control mechanism compared to fiber channel, different frame size compared to fiber channel, and so on. So there's some technical issues to be resolved. But it'll be interesting to see when you have iSCSI running at 10 gig and FCOE running at 10 gig, where customers will decide to land on those two different technologies.
Well, and I got to think that FCOE will be faster and iSCSI will be cheaper.
Probably. But we're talking, probably the differentiator will be in the cost comparison between the host bus adapters that are used.
And host bus adapter is an interesting point. iSCSI will work over just the regular Ethernet port that's built into the server. But there are also dedicated cards that have features in them specific to making iSCSI faster.
And those cards typically will employ TCP offload engines or TOEs.
Right.
So they do the TCP offloading. They may include ICER, which is the iSCSI extensions for RDMA, which eliminates all these multiple copies that are required to move you know, reassemble the data and move it up the stack to memory. And if you use ICER as part of the iSCSI driver, the data is automatically assembled and then can be shoved directly into the application memory. This is something that the Fibre Channel host bus adapter does already.
Yeah, I think that the point here is that these are all things Fibre Channel developed first. Fibre Channel is the high-end solution with the most features up front. But iSCSI has this interesting progression from just a basic Ethernet networking card to these more advanced devices that improve the performance. So you can seem to be able to scale it gradually. But there's a limit where that you're going to hit where a Fibre Channel solution would make more sense.
And frankly, for the mid-tier level customers that are moving off of direct attached storage, iSCSI is a logical beginning point. And if they are successful and grow their businesses and become more complex and have larger demands on their applications, then certainly there's nothing that keeps them, prevents them from migrating to the higher performance solution
right
onto Fibre Channel, and even having an admixture of protocols, continuing to have some applications run on iSCSI and the new, more powerful, more demanding applications run on Fibre Channel. Oh, I should mention, in addition to the iSCSI protocol, which is really the way that you move the block data back and forth over TCP/IP, there's a additional supplemental protocol called ISNS, which is the Internet Storage Name Service. And the reason that that's required is because, again, this is an advanced function for device discovery that's built into Fibre Channel fabric switches and directors,
right,
but is lacking in the Ethernet world. So you have to have somewhere, I mean, for larger configurations, you don't have to have it really for smaller configurations.
Right.
But as you get to a certain population of iSCSI servers, you want to begin automating the process of device discovery. So that if you have multiple storage targets and multiple servers, you have a simple name server function where all the devices can register with the ISNS server. And this is, again, software that Microsoft already supplies. They register with an ISNS server. The authentication protocols can be wrapped around the ISNS server. The zoning or assignment authorized connections between designated servers and designated storage lines or logical units can be set up all within the bounds of the ISNS.
Yeah, that just sounds like when you start to grow out here, you're going to want more automation around these things. As you add one filer after the other, it's a different picture when you've just got one or two filers for redundancy. When you've got a rack or two of these things, you're going to want to have that more automated.
Yeah, and this is something that you know, Microsoft has been tracking all along. I worked with them early on when I was at Nishan Systems in development of their ISNS server, as well as iSCSI, drivers. And now they now have also developed an iSCSI target. So you could, on the very low end, you could build that entire iSCSI infrastructure just using off-the-shelf components.
Right. And as you need to go faster, replace them with optimized parts for those kinds of capabilities.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, Tom, I really enjoy this conversation. iSCSI is cool stuff. And I think you hinted to this, that it's underutilized. We still have more detached or direct attached storage than we really need. The price points on this stuff are so low now. If the cost of buying any kind of drive array, it ought to be at least iSCSI, if not better.
Agreed.
Well, thank you for your time. I really appreciate it.
Thanks, Greg. Thanks, Richard.
And we'll talk to you next week on Run As Radio.